for the local county seat.
It's an amazing story. And, you know, shortly after Donald Trump gutted Bears ears by 85%, you know, with a name like Tempest, I was irate and angry. And I know that's not healthy. And I went down to visit Willie Gray Eyes, who at that time was chair of Utah Today Bekea. And I said, Willie, what do you do with your anger? And he looked at me and he said, Terry, it can no longer be about anger. It has to be about healing. And I think about that every day. And coming from Willie, I can't tell you what that means. You know, Willie is an incredible community organizer. His car has 800,000 miles and it's recognized all over the state and in the Four Corners area. He has been a lifelong advocate of healthcare, education, food, security for the elderly in Indian country on the Navajo Reservation, in particular Utah Navajo specifically. He's beloved by his own people. He recognized that San Juan County, one of the largest counties in the United States, had been racially gerrymandered. And he filed suit with the state of Utah and won the case that, in fact, it was. When he saw that open space of democracy open, he realized he had an obligation to stand inside it, to fill that space. He ran for county commission, commissioner. There are three. He won, as did another native, Mary Boy. And it became, for the first time in history in the state of Utah, a native majority. The Frontier Mormons, that I will call that, were furious. And Kelly Laws, who ran against Willie Gray Eyes, said publicly, I will not concede. This is an illegitimate election by an illegitimate candidate. Willie Gray Eyes is not a resident of the state of Utah. Can you imagine? And here he and his family have lived at the base of Navajo Mountain in Utah for generations. The court case ensued. I was there. It was in January last year, 2019. It was a wicked cold day. The courthouse was packed with largely white Mormon people, my own people, of whom I'm still a part. And it was a judge who had just been called by Trump, extremely conservative. Willie's defense, instead of, you know, his voting records, instead of all of the community work he's done, instead of testimonies on his character, Willie's sole defense was, I am a resident of Utah because my umbilical cord is buried here. I mean, you can imagine the guffaws in the state of Utah and in the court and among the attorneys and the judge. But as his case was revealed on his side after huge attacks, desperate attacks, compelling attacks, that he was not a resident of the state of Utah, he won his case. And the most conservative of judges in his reply said, Willie Gray Eyes is as deep a resident as any of us. And if we all could assume the same kind of notion of dwelling in place that Willie Gray Eyes, we would be better people.
Exactly.
It was astonishing. And I find that more than hopeful. I find it transformative.
It is. And kind of a coda to that story that you write about is that during some really big snowstorm, a fellow commissioner, I think he was white and Mormon.
Yes, he was.
Maybe you can...
It was so beautiful. Bruce Adams, who's been a commissioner for over a decade or so, called Willie after, you know, the trial and said, Willie, I'm calling because I'm concerned about you and your community. How are the roads out there? And Willie said it was the first time. You know, so when Willie says it can no longer be about anger, it has to be about healing. You know, I think that this story is indicative. And, you know, I think we're eroding and evolving at once, and we need not lose hope. We just need to know where it dwells. And again, I believe it dwells in community, in deep listening, and in the idea that we have to forge different types of relationships. Now, I don't want to paint a false picture either, Justine, because in this last election in November, there were those in San Juan County who still are furious that it isn't about healing for them. It is about take down and take over. And they brought forth a bill. It might as well have been called a segregation bill, that they wanted to divide San Juan County into white San Juan County and Indian San Juan County. It lost, luckily, but only by 100 votes.
Well, there we are. I mean, it's perseverance is a word that comes to me.
And you just keep working. And I think it's that idea, engagement is a prayer. And again, I feel like it's not even for me about hope. It's, you know, and as a writer, there was one point in working on these essays in Erosion, do I have to be a hopeful writer or can I be an evolving one? You know, does this have to be a hopeful story or an engaging one? I think it's about how do we tell the truth of our lives and see where we are for the what is and what we can become and where we have come from.
Exactly. And I know that there's one part of the book, we mentioned this in an earlier interview, Tim DeChristopher. And how he went to prison for leasing some oil.
It was an act of civil disobedience in bidding up the leases for fair market value.
Right.
So, and he served in federal prison for 2 years.
A whole big story about that. But one of the things that you bring up in that essay of your conversation with him, he makes a comment, something like, what we are lacking in this whole movement is grieving. We have not grieved. And it just really struck me in my heart. There was something true about that. And that's what you talk about. When we open the program, you in our conversation, you talk about in the face, you know, standing in the face of heartbreak. And so say something about that grieving process and why that's important.
I so appreciate you bringing this up. Grief is love. And I think as long as we remember that, that those pangs, true physical pains we feel, that is love. That is what love looks like. That is what love feels like. And even in our grief, especially in our grief, we are embraced by that love. My father called not long ago. His son, my brother, Dan Dixon Tempest, hung himself on July 27th, 2018. And my father called and he said, we just have to stare it down. And I said, what? You know, what? And he said, grief. I finally figured it out. We just have to stare it down. Now, that's my father, the Marlboro man without the cigarette. You know, the man who can, who is in control of everything, and yet he knows he's in control of nothing, especially his emotions. And that, for him, was how he could embrace the loss, the death, the heartbreak of his son's death by suicide. We have to stare it down. You know, for me, it's how do we have the courage to not look away?
You mentioned in an earlier interview, we really go into detail about when you went to Spain and you sat with this painting by Bosch. And
just The Garden of Earthly Delights.
Garden of Earthly Delights. It was just a wonderful book. Which book was that?
An Exercise in Madness, Leap.
Leap, in your book Leap, and I just highly recommend it. And so you're staring at that painting, and you bring it up again in the context of grief. What did you find in that painting?
Well, The brightest point in Hieronymus Bosch's triptych of the Garden of Earthly Delights is in hell. It's like Blake, you know, Tiger, Tiger, Burning Bright. It's the flames. And, you know...
So that's the grief, isn't it? Where it's burning bright. I think there's something energetic there.
Yeah, I think you're right. You know, where we choose to place our attention, whether it's grief, whether it's love, whether it's our work, and certainly, you know, having now every day, you know, mourning my brother, wondering what we could have done, you know, realizing what we didn't do. I feel that window flaming in my own heart. But I think, how to say this, Justine, you know, you write a book from the inside out, but you don't really know what the book is about. And in many ways, I thought this book was about this moment in time. And, you know, there's some angry pieces in this book. There's some dark pieces in this book. But now that I've lived with this book for a few months, I think this book is about healing. I think it goes back to Willie. You know, it can no longer be about anger. It has to be about healing. And Joan O'Yellowman, who's a holy person and a medicine person that lives in Navajo country in Monument Valley, he said to me not long ago, we have to go deeper. We have to go deeper. And so what does that mean, Justine? You know, how do we go deeper in all aspects of our lives? And I think the most important thing in this book for me was really being able to write on paper what that was like to go with my brother Hank, who's our youngest brother, and face the commitment we made to Dan to see him through his cremation. That was not something I thought I could bear. And in fact, I was not prepared to do that, but my youngest brother was. And of course, I stayed with him, and of course, we went through that together. And it changed me.
Yes.
There was something so powerful about, you know, lifting your brother's body into the flames.
True enough. True enough. Thank you so much for sharing that in the book in such detail. I was weeping throughout that part. I wept in many parts. I'm here with Terry Tempest Williams. She is the author of Erosion, Essays of Undoing. I'm Justine Willis-Toms. You're listening to New Dimensions. Terry Tempest Williams, and she is the author of Erosion, Essays of Undoing. And Terry, I'm just reminded as we're talking about grief and talking about your brother and the way we hold that and have to hold that in our love and our grief and our courage to send one off so completely.
I mean, to witness the beauty of someone like Mr. Rabe, who, in a black suit with welding gloves, open the doors of the retort and see your brother's body flaming. I mean, his rib cage, his arms looked His bones, they looked like white prayer flags blowing in the breeze. I mean, he looked like Icarus and resembled the very eagles and hawks that he banded, which was his passion. And then to watch Mr. Rabe rake the bones, gather the bones, separate the bones. And when he left, my brother and I feeling the heat of our brother's life from those bones. And when I asked my youngest brother, Hank, what are you thinking? He looked at me and said, probably the same thing you're thinking. Are these coyote, rabbit, or raven's bones? The same piles of bones bleached on the desert that we as children had seen 1,000 times. There is no hierarchy in death. There's only bones, bones, ash, breath, air. You know, to me, that's the beauty of the full circle of life. And who benefits when we're not able to witness that? And I'm so grateful for my youngest brother's courage. I would have chosen not to do that. I would have looked away.
Right.
But what I didn't realize was the healing that comes by staring it down,
yes,
by embracing that, by feeling the last heat of your brother's body. And then remembering at the end, you know, when we carried his ashes away in a cardboard box to my father's home to tell him what we had witnessed, we realized they weighed 8 pounds, 7 ounces, the same weight of my brother's birth, the same weight of a gallon of water in the desert.
You're talking about being immersed in walking on the earth, actually living it, traveling it, having conversations with nature. And that just reminds me of an experience you had. You were invited to a very powerful ceremony.
Jonah Yellowman, who is a dear friend, had invited Fazal Sheikh and I, who'd been doing work with him and with the community, to come to one of the Yebiche ceremonies, which I had never been to. It was a great honor. And we went. It was a starlit sky. It was very near the spring equinox, freezing cold, beautiful, starstruck night. And it was, all I can tell you, it was a privilege to witness what we witnessed. And Jonah talked to us about what we would see. And it had everything to do with bluebirds, the bluebird people. And I say this hesitantly and respectfully, but after we witnessed this for many, many hours until close to dawn, I'm going to read you this one paragraph. He said, well, I'm explaining this. We left the gathering in the wee hours of the morning, and Jonah drove us back to where we were staying. He got out of his truck and walked us to our rooms. With the Pleiades above us, he turned to me and said, now you have a story to tell. But this is not mine to tell, I said. You will find it, the story that is yours. And I think, you know, we're very mindful, as we should be, of cultural appropriation. What is ours? What is not? What do we witness? What do we keep quiet? What do we share? And it was very clear that Jonah said, you will find your story connected to what you have witnessed. What could that be? Justine, would you believe me when Fazal and I drove back to Castle Valley, where Brooke was, my husband, we literally got out of the car. We heard this bird song. We looked up, and there were 2 bluebirds. And Fazal and I just looked at each other. Brooke came out, and he said, look, that this is the first day the bluebirds have arrived. It didn't end there. I mean, I just had chills. We went in. We were making breakfast. Brooke left. Fazal and I remained. For some reason, I felt moved to go to the back corner of our house. I went into our bedroom. There was a bluebird in the corner that had flown into the house. I knelt down, picked up the bluebird into my hands. Literally, this bluebird walked into my hands. I put my hands very lightly over its back. I walked into the living room. I said, Fazal. He walked in. He saw what was in my hand. He saw the bluebird looking at us. He opened the door. We walked outside. I opened my hands. The bluebird stayed in my hands. A flock of bluebirds circled the house. I lifted up my hands, the bluebird flew into the flock. Who knows the reach of ceremony? What is your story? What is my story? What is our story together? To me, the question that I hold is Earth not enough? Is Earth not enough? And how do we place our hands on the Earth and remember where the source of our power lies? Day in, day out, these are my devotions.
Terry, you often talk about how you are at least open to being aware of a conversation beyond human voices that's available to us. You talk about nature being reciprocal. Somewhere in your book, you talk about how we live in a kind of virtual world. We live where a mouse is something we move around on a table, and
an apple is no longer food, but apple a machine is, that we all are addicted to.
Exactly, and you talk about how we live in our rooms. You have made a statement somewhere along the line about cynicism only comes from air-conditioned rooms, and we're in these rooms that we live in with walls, and we're very big in these rooms.
And we're all complicit.
And we're all complicit in that.
Yeah.
But when you get out into wilderness or into spaces of
and wild. I think our own home ground, wherever that is. You know, I'm so moved by people's sense of place, and it may not be where they live. It may be where their mind goes in meditation. It may be where they return to. It may be a national park. But, you know, I think what we are coming to learn, what Native people have always known, and what science is now corroborating, is the Earth is alive. Castleton Tower, Justine, if we were sitting on our porch with cups of tea and looked to the east, there is a 400-foot monolith made of Wingate sandstone. Four geologists from the University of Utah have just determined that Castleton Tower has a pulse. Rock has a voice. Stone is alive. And they placed a seismometer at the base of Castleton Tower, employed two climbers that placed another seismometer at the top, and what they heard was a heartbeat that registers in tandem with our own. Castleton Tower has a pulse. We have a pulse. The Earth has a pulse. The Earth's pulse is in our hands. How can we not respond?
And this rock is not static.
It is not static. You know, many of us, as they say it in their report, see it as a stoic presence. It is alive. It registers waves. Waves, gravity, pulls, you know, bubbling lava. I mean, it registers even our own heartbeat. That's how porous, and I don't even have the language. But, you know, if we begin to see the world that way, will our actions take on a different kind of import? I wonder about that. You know, and one of the things my brother said before he died was, can I love myself enough to change? You know, can we love ourselves enough to change, and what does that look like? Again, those echoes, it can no longer be about anger, it has to be about healing. How do we go deeper? We are eroding and evolving at once.
And we must have those conversations beyond our limited tribe. I think you mentioned something about people. We're authors of our own certitude, is what you say.
Yeah.
And we hear that from the other. Oh, they're so certain about that. But what am I so certain about?
Exactly. Exactly.
So it's your...
I mean, my brother said that to me the other, around our table at Thanksgiving. I was very certain of what I was saying, you know, about our current administration. And he just said, Terry, are you happy there? How are you feeling right now? You know, my blood pressure was skyrocketing, you know, just... And again, he just brought me back into that place of communion and communication. And again, how do we go deeper? And it's not, I mean, yes, it's about Donald Trump. It's not about Donald Trump. I mean, this is a symptom. We're all a symptom of a world, you know, that we're creating and moving too fast. How do we slow down? How do we breathe?
How do we breathe?
I love you.
I love you.
And you wrapped me in owl feathers.
Oh, wonderful. You just look gorgeous in owl feathers. I've been here. Thank you so much, Terry. I've been here with Terry Tempest Williams, and she is the author of many books, including Erosion, Essays of Becoming. Is it Belonging?
It's all the same. Essays of Undoing. And I think that's it, that our undoing is our becoming.
Oh, beautifully said. Thank you. And if you want to know more about our work, you can go to our website, coyoteclan.com, or you can get there through the New Dimensions website, newdimensions.org. I'm Justine Willis-Toms. You've been listening to New Dimensions. This is program number 3691.
New Dimensions Radio has been making a difference on our planet since 1973, thanks to the generosity of our listeners. You too can help make a difference with a tax-deductible donation or membership. Please visit our website, newdimensions.org, and just click the donate button. You can also subscribe to our free weekly podcasts and find over 1,000 hours of audio dialogues in our searchable archive. New Dimensions is produced by New Dimensions Radio in Santa Rosa, California, USA. Our executive producer is Justine Willis-Toms. Our post-production editor is Lou Judson. This program was recorded at Strawberry Hill Productions, a full-service podcast production studio in Novato, California. We sincerely thank all of you who have supported us by being members of Friends of New Dimensions, as well as members of our affiliate stations. My name is Dan Drayson. On behalf of everyone at New Dimensions, whose endeavors make this program possible, I'm wishing you well. New Dimensions Radio is an independent producer supported by listener contributions. To find out more about the program you've just heard, to subscribe to our free weekly newsletter and our New Dimensions and New Dimensions Cafe podcasts, and to access thousands of other programs in the New Dimensions archive, please visit our website, newdimensions.org. That's newdimensions.org. Or call us at 707-468-5215. That's 707-468-5215. Please join us next time as we explore New Dimensions.
Celebrating Vancouver's underground rock music culture for 3 days of shows from incredible local and touring artists, the second annual Unreal City Festival takes over the Rickshaw Theater and the Russian Hall, January 15th to 17th. Featuring local artists like Worry War, Jody Glenham,
so let it keep raining.
CJSF chart toppers Devour, and the Houseplant. Scene veterans By a Thread. And headliner Spencer Krug of Wolf Parade, Sunset Rubdown, and Moonface. This unique festival finds bands and music artists upstairs, while downstairs you get access to the coziest grandma's living room style lounge in the city, with DJs, hot food, drinks, on-site tattoo artists, and more. The second annual Unreal City Festival, January 15th to 17th at the Rickshaw Theater and the Russian Hall in East Vancouver. For passes, go to unrealcity.rocks or head to CJSF Music on Instagram to win tickets.
You're listening to CJSF at 90.1 FM in Burnaby, where you can engage with us via our website at cjsf.ca or on our social media, which is CJSF Radio on TikTok and Blue Sky, or CJSF Music and CJSF Talk on Instagram.